House Resource meeting to order at about 1:30, and today is Wednesday, the 18th of April, and if the committee secretary can take the roll call.
Representative Fate?
Here.
Representative McGuire?
Absent.
Representative Green?
Here.
Representative Chenault? Absent. Representative Stevens?
Here.
Representative Kastner? Absent. Representative Curtula?
Here.
Representative Masick?
Here.
Representative Scalzi?
Here.
Thank you. Today, we're going to be hearing Senate Bill 143 and Senate Bill 156. And Representative Kastner is sick, apparently. And we will take up Senate Bill 143 at this time. And I understand we have Senator Torgerson here to testify. Here as well.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Senator Torgerson. How are you today?
You ready to rock and roll?
Yes.
Okay. Senate Bill 143 basically allows the department to start collecting fees for pipeline applications or for pre-applications of pipelines. So our current system now is that you have to have an application on file before we can enter into a memorandum of agreement to collect the fees. So when I looked at the fiscal note that the governor put in, the $10 million for next year's pipeline work that he wanted to have his administration do, a lot of that is still reimbursable after we enter into after we have an application actually filed. But I thought it was better to go this way, to just authorize the department to do enter into agreements now for pre-application work. And that does several things. First of all, we're not going to be out spending money on things that they don't want, because they're not going to be willing to pay for something unless it's work that they actually deem necessary to have done, or through our negotiations we tell them it needs to be done. But in any event, it leads to an agreement of understanding between the parties of what work will be done. And then the folks at the producers or whoever happen to have a application or route under consideration would then sign the agreement and write us a check for the work that we're going to do. The bill does sunset December 31st of 2003. There have been some questions on why I did that, but I basically left this a real narrow window. I believe that I don't necessarily want the administration out cutting deals on pipeline routes forever, but we all know that we're talking about gas lines. We all know the routes that are being talked about and some other things in all the major players. So I don't think there'll be any major surprises in the next couple of years, but to leave this on the books forever, I believe that these things should come back before the legislature would have a better control of it, even in the pre-application stage. So that's why the sunset. The fiscal note basically says that the DR estimates at least 50% of the reimbursable cost would be captured through this agreement. So I actually believe it's higher than that when they actually sit down and start negotiating what duties that they want the state to perform and what studies or what other things they need to make decisions in the pre-application stage, that I think you'll see that 50% number up there substantially higher. That's it.
Thank you, Senator Torgerson. Are there any questions? Hearing none.
Bring her on.
Let's drop the hook easy for the time.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the bill was an individual recommendation and fiscal note.
Are there any objections to moving Senate Bill 143 out of committee? And I don't believe we have anybody in the audience that would like to testify before we make that motion.
Never get off that easy again. After calling 3 minutes.
Hearing none, then Senate Bill 143 is moved out of the House Resource Committee. Thank you, Vice Chair.
How can you argue? I mean, really.
Yeah.
Next item of business, we're taking up for Senate Bill 156. I believe this is the resource version. And we do have Senator Torgerson here again to, or Christie, I believe Christie will be.
I'm bringing in the major players now.
Giving us an overview on this.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Christie Tibbles, Legislative Assistant to Senator Drew Pierce and Vice Chair of the Senate Resources Committee. Senate Bill 156 amends the Alaska Land Act to clarify the requirement that the Department of Natural Resources prepare a single written best interest finding for multi-phase development projects. In 1994, the legislature passed Senate Bill 308 in reaction to a series of decisions by the Alaska Supreme Court. And Senate Bill 308 explicitly allowed project phasing and precisely defined the scope of the best interest finding determination. Since that passage of Senate Bill 308, the Alaska Supreme Court recently declared that the Department of Natural Resources is obliged at each phase of development to issue a best interest finding relating to that phase before the proposed development may proceed. This act is intended to make clear that no other best interest finding is required after the disposal phase. The best interest finding shall be based upon known information or information that is made available to the director, even if all potential cumulative impacts of the project are not known, and public notice and the opportunity to comment shall be provided at each phase of an oil and gas project. Senate Bill 156 is supported by the administration. And if you have any, answer any questions, or we have folks from Division of Oil and Gas to answer questions too.
Are there any questions for Christie? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. And we do have, I believe, Bill Britt should be online just to answer questions if there are any questions. And we do have one person that's signed up here in Juneau to testify, and that's Sue Schrader. If you can please come forward and give us your name and affiliation and testimony for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Masick. My name is Susan Schrader. I am with the Alaska Conservation Alliance and Alaska Conservation Voters. And I've addressed this committee before, so you know that we are sister nonprofit organizations. And many of our members do participate in the public notice and comment opportunities during the state's review of development projects of all types. This ability of concerned citizens to meaningfully express their opinions about activities that involve the disposal of state land or an interest in state land is, of course, as we know, guaranteed under the Constitution. In essence, this bill, in an effort to avoid inconvenience and cost for the oil and gas industry as well as for DNR, significantly limits the public's ability to look carefully at disposals of state land. Why shouldn't DNR be obliged to take a big picture, holistic look and issue a best interest finding at subsequent phases of a multi-phase project that may span 6 years or more, as typically the oil and gas projects do? Now, the legislation does provide for public notice and comment on subsequent phases through the Alaska Coastal Management Program, the ACMP, process for projects that fall within coastal districts. To our reading of the bill, it's a little unclear what the bill is providing for projects that do not occur within a coastal district. There was a suggestion at a previous hearing that the department would promulgate new regulations for public notice and comment for those projects outside of a coastal district, but that certainly is not clearly reflected in the bill's language. And we would clearly contend that the Byzantine process of ACMP is not very friendly to citizens trying to comment through that process. You really need to be quite well versed in the intricacies of state law and state regulations to do any type of meaningful comment using the ACMP process. So we're encouraging the committee members to take a look at this bill, to consider amendments to the bill that would clearly direct DNR to adopt meaningful regulations for public notice and comment in subsequent phases. both for those projects that fall within a coastal district and those that fall outside of one. And unless that can be done, we urge you not to support the legislation for the simple reason that while it may be in the oil industry's best interest, it is clearly not in Alaskan's best interest.
Thank you for your testimony. And we understand that you did supply committee members with a copy of your best interest findings, testimony. It'll be easier to, in the future, if you could try to get us this material ahead of time. Any members could at least have a chance to review it. Are there any questions for Sue? Vice Chair Bates.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. You said this is not in Alaska's best interest. The timeline, as I see it, in the permitting process has been shortened in this bill. Are you thinking, and did you express, that it's not in the public's best interest to shorten the timeline of permitting? And I give a case in point of the gas pipeline that everybody has been waiting for nearly 20 years. And there's other situations where a thorough public input accompanied by the rapidity of which permitting can take place is in the public's best interest. Do you think that it would not be in the public's best interest to shorten these things?
Through the Chair, Representative Fate, if by shortening and streamlining a permitting process to make it more efficient comes at the expense of the opportunity for meaningful public oversight and comment, then no, I don't think it's in Alaskan's best interest. The whole reason why over the course of many, many years, both states as well as U.S. Congress have passed laws that allow for opportunity for the public to comment, just because history has shown us that when you do not give the public that opportunity, many aspects of the project will be overlooked, many of its impacts will be overlooked.
Are you telling me then that there's no opportunity for public input in this?
Again, through the Chair, Representative Fate, what I'm suggesting is that the opportunities that are outlined in the bill, particularly in the beginning of the bill where they list the number of different permits that are required, do not in any way substitute for the type of public comment period that is included with the best interest finding.
I have many more, but I'll let somebody else.
Okay. Co-Chair Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reference down here that the Byzantine ACMP, Byzantine, I guess that means antiquated or outdated?
Very complex and convoluted.
Okay, thank you. The complex process is extremely difficult to navigate for any Alaskan who is not familiar with the intricacies of state law. I would have a tendency to disagree with that, having been on the Coastal Policy Council back when 308 first came through. And I guess I saw a lot of public comment that actually inundated the system, and I felt, as a member, very overwhelmed at having to have so much public discussion on the issue. And I thought that the people that testified were well informed. Could you cite an example for me that specifically outlines why this is detrimental to the public process?
Through the Chair, Representative Scalzi, I personally too have commented mainly on local Juneau and Southeast issues through the ACMP process on consistency determination. I'm not an attorney, although I'm relatively well-versed in state law, and I have found it to be quite difficult by the requirements needed to cite specific regulations or specific statutes in a comment letter. I think for most Alaskans, for most private citizens, when they want to comment about developments that might impact their neighborhoods, their businesses, we shouldn't be necessarily requiring them to get their hands on a copy of the statutes and start quoting statutes and regulations in their comments. The folks within my organizations that routinely comment through the ACMP process typically are professional folks that are very familiar with the laws, or they are attorneys. Many of our volunteers, small volunteer organizations, will literally have to go to an attorney to help them through trying to do comments through ACMP. And again, just comparing that process which, with the process of public notice and comment with the best interest finding. I think the best interest finding process is far more user-friendly.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I guess that my faith in the system is that the Alaska Coastal Policy Council is made up of lay people and not attorneys. Present company accepted. And I thought that the input from the public was, you know, pretty much well received by the council members. So I just disagree with that comment. But thank you.
Representative Cotula.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for having been out of the room in a fit of ethical concern. I talked to the Attorney General's office because, sort of interestingly enough, where everyone who participated in SB 38 and the cases leading up to it are sort of participating today just in different roles. And I was the attorney for the Coastal Policy Council at that time and had information about how it all came about, and just wanted to double check that we didn't think there was any ethical problem with me sitting, and none of us believe that there is. So with that on the record, could I ask the witness a couple questions and just proceed? Thank you.
Sure. And also we have Representative Chenault here joined us.
Well, he made it?
Thanks,
Madam Chair. My question is this, Sue, and I apologize if I've missed this in previous testimony, but the way that I'm understanding the bill, if the director only has to prepare a single written finding, there still would have to be, before a next phase, there would have to be a chance for public notice and opportunity to comment. And it looks like under regulations that are already provided before the department, unless there's a consistency review. Is that the way that you're understanding the bill works?
Through the Chair, Representative Tertula, yes, I believe so. There was testimony on the Senate side with this bill that I understood to suggest that there would be new regulations for public notice and comment adopted for those by DNR for those projects that are with are outside of a coastal district. If itself in a coastal district, it would be covered by ACMP.
And Madam Chair, just one second question, and that is, since Representative Scalzi's and my time with the Coastal Policy Council, there's been some pretty radical changes to how public comments taken with the Coastal Management Program. Am I right? And could you just describe just a little bit of how that's changed?
Through the Chair again, I probably can't very effectively because my frustration with trying to get comments, and I literally remember one instance where I sent comments in, and again, not in my capacity working for Alaska Conservation Voters, but as a private citizen, a volunteer for Juneau Audubon Society, and I got them sent back to me saying that I didn't quote the right statutes or regulations, and I would have to go back and redo my comments before they could be considered. And I just think that's asking a little much of most Alaskans in their spare time to be doing.
Thank you. Ms.
Hey, are there any other questions for Susan? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
And do we have anybody online that would like to testify on Senate Bill 156?
Madam Chairman, for the record, this is Mark Myers of the Division of Oil and Gas. And we had just a few comments. One is the division understands the need, the department understands the need to promulgate regulations for dealing with the development outside of the ACMP area. So that's fully our intention. That's our understanding. That's the legislative intention of the bill as well. The second issue is just in terms of implementation of a program, if we were to do a best interest finding at each stage of exploration, development, and transportation, a quick look at sort of the costs involved, the issues involved, and looked at projects going on this year that would qualify for that. I could come up with a list of a minimum of at least 12 projects, major projects that would involve that, the best interest finding. We're requiring a significant increase in staffing size. We estimate about 11 people. That would include six best interest riders, a couple vendors, one of them being a supervisor, another permitting coordinator to make sure things are in line with the permitting processes that are listed out in the legislation, cartographer, graphics, a clerk, et cetera. That brings about 11 people in, so we have a significant expansion. In fact, we have a much larger staff than we currently do. That might mirror what the Minerals Management Service has. There, our best interest line, we have 25 people staff, and we're about $2 million. The other, so we have to significantly enlarge our staff with a significant effect if we were to implement, literally implement a best interest finding at each of the phases. And that, of course, is something we have not done in time. The other issue is, could we do in a timely manner? It would be very difficult in terms of the exploration phase because that exploration is occurring in a very narrow window in the winter. To come up with a multiple plan, even by area, we'd have to really have contract workers in addition to the staff really to be able to do that. The same thing with development projects. I think we would see a significant slowdown of the process of permitting and development because of this, simply because there's an additional demand on our staff, an additional review of the other permitting processes that we go on. And I just mentioned some of the things that affect us, the Division of Oil and Gas. It would also have an effect on other organizations that input into the current permitting processes, including DEC and Fish and Game. I appreciate the chance to comment. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mark? Go ahead. Go. Vice Chair Bate.
You were just citing, I want to make this clear, you were just citing what the costs would be if you had to go through each phase, the findings, and this makes it clear that you only have a best interest finding after the disposal phase. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Fate. At the disposal phase, we have the best interest finding currently. If we were to implement as the catchment phase is suggested, one at each phase, each of the major phases of development, that's what I was discussing in terms of the additional personnel costs and time issues involved.
Thank you very much. Just wanted to clarify that.
And we have in our packet a copy of the Kachemak Bay Conservation Society.
Right, I see it here.
Okay. Are there any questions, Representative Petula?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Director, I'm interested in two things. The first is, how will your review work in a phased process? If you're going to now be allowed to not do a best interest finding, how will your review work at every stage? What will you be looking at? And specifically, I'm interested in, how are you going to deal with cumulative impacts of a project? The second thing I'm interested in is, how will the Coastal Management Program review work? So if you're not doing it, how will theirs work? I want to understand it to be clear on how you're going to take into account the impacts that up to now and under all of the court rulings we've been told that we have to consider before a project, if it gets its benefit of being phased, has to have. Thanks. And I'm sorry, that was kind of a long question, but I think was it okay? Did you understand the gist of that?
Yes, I think I did, Representative Cotula, Chair.
Thanks.
I think a couple of things is right now, currently, we do not do a best interest finding at later phases. So, again, I think this bill adds to what we are currently doing in terms of public input and process. What we do is significant number of the elements involved here, our permitting process for both exploration and development projects. In addition, we have, of course, unitization processes, which do have, in fact, public comment periods. So this bill certainly adds another dimension of opportunity for public input into the process. Additionally, a lot of our information comes via our permitting process when we go through the permitting process. Additional information comes through the typical requirement for environmental assessment or environmental impact statement that goes along with the development stage, which does deal with issues of cumulative impact that you suggest. So again, I think part of our concern, I guess, with not having the certification in the bill is the redundancy of the other processes as relating to what a best interest finding would add in value. There probably are some areas, as you had mentioned, in cumulative impact, that if there were not an EA or EIS or a North Slope Borough review of the process, which again occurs on North Slope, there might be a few areas there that we do not cover that would be covered under the best interest finding. I think those areas are relatively minimal, and the cost of implementing the effort and the delay is pretty severe. I hope that answers the question.
If I might, Madam Chair. Well, how are you at DNR? We know the lineup of the cases, and the cases originally stood at no phasing, and then we moved to allowing phased projects, and the danger of that is that if you're not looking at cumulative impact, you can miss important things. So what I'm concerned about is, how are you going to assure that you are going to be reviewing for those cumulative impacts at the following stages? And I just need a description of that so I can understand how that's happened. Are you reviewing the EISs and the EAs? Is that how you're going to go about it? Are you going to rely on other information? Are you going to allow public testimony? I'm just really unclear about how that's going to happen.
Yes, Representative Fertua, through the chair. I think the answer is, I think you've answered the question for us. We rely heavily on the other processes prior to issuing our permits for exploration wells and development. Our guys, and that's one of their real time-consuming challenges, that information is integrated into our permitting process. So that's really where we take the additional information through that. And in addition, also, any public information that is provided is also taken into account in that process in the permitting. So there is, it's not as probably direct and straightforward as it would be in terms of a separate best interest finding. But again, I think in most areas, that area heavily overlaps in our facility control permitting process and in our review of those permits.
Madam Chair? One last. I am interested if you can comment on how the coastal management review would go. But before I ask just a final on that, how many written findings will you be making? Will you be making just the one written finding and then continuing at each phase? Can you describe how that will work to me?
Yeah, I think Representative Cartula for the chair. The basic right now is there's a single best interest finding done at the disposal station. Then that is followed by, assuming there's additional operations, seismic operations, well drilling operations, development operations, laying gravel pads for the initial phase of development, unitization, participating areas. Then in that process, there is another review. And in some of those processes right now, not all of them, we have a public comment period. I think this bill requires us, especially when we're outside the coastal zone, to add a number of additional public comment periods external to what we currently have. So again, I think we strengthen the input that we get into the decisions that we then write for units or for participating areas or for permits to own a well. I think as far as the AMCP process, it's best to have DGC describe it, since there are real drivers in that.
Thank you. Could I just back to, though, will you make more written findings after the public comment period that you're going to consider in the subsequent phases?
At this point, I don't think we intend on doing additional written comments. What we do is to integrate the written comments into our current processes. That's fine.
Follow-up, Representative Cartula. How would anyone appeal when there would be no written decisions from that? How would that work?
I think the public input would go into the process of issuing that permit, whether or not actually issued, whether it's appropriate. Again, we in that process, we are reviewing the additional information from all sources that are available. It provides another stream of information for us to evaluate in that process of the permit or in that unit application or that participating area decision or that exploration well permit, et cetera.
Thank you. So it'd just be basically at the end of the permit process that you'd bring your concerns out. Thank you.
Yeah, and of course, the public would always have the ability to appeal our processes, our permits, unit decisions, et cetera.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions for Mr. Meyer? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. And I guess we'll move here to Juneau. Is there anybody here in Juneau that would like to testify on the CS for Senate Bill 156? Hearing none, we'll close public comment and open it up for committee discussion. Representative Cretula.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm just a little concerned that we don't have anyone here, and again, I apologize if it happened before I came in the room, there's no description of exactly how the coastal management program process is really going to work. And I think maybe someone can describe it as it currently exists. I haven't done it in 4 years, so I'm not sure exactly how that's going to pick up the process when it's not done by DNR. So just for the record, that concerns me.
Christy, would you have any opinion or? Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that may have an opinion or advice on this topic? You'd like to step forward and give your name and affiliation for the record?
For the record, Madam Chairman, my name is Jim Eason. And I'm not affiliated for the purposes of this testimony. I'm speaking as a former director of the Division of Oil and Gas and also the director who was there when this, the initial legislation, SB 308, was drafted. And my understanding is that this bill will in no way affect the operation of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. Whatever review processes are underway there and whatever review processes have been underway since the initial bill was passed will continue. This only affects the court's determination that the agency, DNR in this case, has to draft a separate best interest finding for every phase. And based upon my experience at the time, it was clear to me, at least. Sometimes it's only clear to me and maybe not to everyone else involved, but with that disclaimer, the intent has always been, as expressed in statute, that there be one best interest finding. And that's at the disposal. And that the disposal phase in the case of an oil and gas lease sale is the decision to offer the lease to a person. And the series of court cases that you have before you that have triggered the need to come back and clarify or reinforce, is the way I think of it, the decision that the legislature made in passing 308, began to graft on to the initial process of a disposal best interest finding, the requirement that separate findings be done in best interest findings, or separate phases. And again, my understanding is that this bill will not affect the ACMP process. That will continue parallel. There will be an ACMP review of the disposal and of the best interest finding process at the lease sale. But in addition, there are ACMP reviews of permits for exploration as well as development that will continue just as they have before.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Ready for the disposition of this bill?
Yes, I am, Vice Chair Fate.
Then I would move that we move this bill out with personal recommendations, and I think it has a zero fiscal note.
Yes, it does. Are there any objections to moving yes for Senate Bill 156
with individual
recommendations? With individual
recommendations.
Yeah. Hearing none, then Senate Bill 156 is moved out of committee. And I would like to say that our next meeting will be Friday, April 20th, from 1 to 3, and we're now under the 24-hour notice rule, and there may be bills added to Friday's schedule tomorrow. So
okay.
Just want the committee to be aware of that. And with that, we are adjourned. Oh.
No. Just checking. If that happens, will you still get the packets to us?
Look at what
you got here. That's right, never mouth off.